Hi, and welcome to the Passionistas Project podcast. We're Amy and Nancy Harrington, and our guest today is three-time Emmy-nominated costume designer Tarry Ann Gordon. You've probably seen her work on shows like The Nanny with Fran Drescher and the Netflix reboot of One Day at a Time, starring Rita Moreno. She's also had a long-standing collaboration with country superstar Reba McEntire. We're so excited to have her on the show with us today.
Happy to be here. Thank you so much.
What are you most passionate about?
Cooking. I love to cook. but that's not what this is about. I love storytelling. I love film, television. I've always been involved with sitcoms primarily. I love working with some of the women I've worked with. I've had an exciting and interesting career. Not a huge career, but I've always enjoyed the people I've worked with and the projects I've done.
When did you first get interested in costume design?
I've been doing costumes since childhood. My first memory of actually doing something with fabric, I was in fourth grade, and I was using my mother's Singer sewing machine, and for Christmas I asked for a box of fabric. And I remember getting yards of broadcloth in every color, and I started making clothing for my dolls. I never played with the dolls. I just made them clothes. So that was my first foray into costume design, perhaps. I think my fondest memory is Halloween. Although you would think that perhaps I had all these amazing costumes my entire childhood, I had one costume my entire life, and I just loved it. And it was the simplest, it was a witch. My sister was a witch, and when she grew, she's 6 years older than me, so when she grew out of trick-or-treating, I inherited her witch costume. But while we were both trick-or-treating, we both had the same costume, different rubber masks that would freeze to our face because in Meadville, Pennsylvania, the first snow is always at Halloween. So you would be just frozen and the mask was stuck to your face and it was sweaty and then would freeze and then drool would happen. It was quite a picture. But the costume, she was the big witch, I was the little witch. And when she grew out of trick-or-treating, I became the big and only witch. And it's my fondest memory. I never thought that I needed to change costumes or be anything else. I was just super happy in that little black broadcloth costume that my mother had made us.
Did you go to school to study costume design?
In high school, I did all the theater projects, and a group of friends and myself, we created the Meadville Community Theater, which still is in existence today, and that's where we got our dramatic yayas out. And not only did I do all the costumes for the shows, I also was in the shows, and it's great being from a small town because you can be a big fish in a very small puddle. And I did all the theater stuff that was offered at the high school and was also very involved in art. And it was always a toss-up with me whether I wanted to go into an art career or into theater. I finally decided on Slippery Rock State College, which is actually a phys ed school. But they offered a really wonderful opportunity at the theater there. And I was employed by the department to be one of the student employees at Miller Auditorium. So we would have touring companies come in, and we would do maybe 4 to 6 shows a season, a year. And I eventually ended up designing those. My senior year, I did the entire season, plus took care of touring companies. And so developed a fairly nice portfolio. And then consequently went to Carnegie Mellon, got my MFA in costume design. That's an amazing program. And it has been my life, my entire career, because we all stay very close. All of those of us from especially that class period, we're all out here, we stay in touch, we connect, we get together, we make sure everybody else is working, or if somebody has a medical issue at this point in our lives, we stay in touch. So it's been a really wonderful career and trajectory.
Was there a moment when you thought, this is what I want to do for a living?
Absolutely. When I was at Slippery Rock, the department was small, but we did wonderful shows, and it was a terrific opportunity. But I was interested in lighting and set painting at that point. And it was a touring company of Tommy, the Who, that kind of solidified my foray into costume design. There was the touring lighting designer for that show was very much a guy. And suddenly I was assigned to him to help him with the lighting panel that we had, because it was archaic. It was very old. The levels would seek. You would be fine. You would establish the lights, and the board would suddenly warm up, and then lights would start coming on over here, and then they'd fade, and then they'd come on over there. And this guy thought I should just go get coffee, and that was it. Go away, little girl. Or you can watch me run the board. That's fine, but, you know, we will do this. And I thought, you know what, Duke? I'm going to let you run the board. And I said nothing about the seeking lights. We're in the middle of the final dress rehearsal for the show, and everything went nuts. It was a pleasurable moment. But it also said to me, you know, this is not going to be my life. This is not what I'm going to fight my entire career. And I'm actually passionate about costume design and dealing with textiles and fabrics. I was very involved with the textile program at Slippery Rock, even though there's only one class. But it kind of solidified things for me. And that's when I really became the costume designer at the school and gave me a great portfolio to go forward.
Did you find that costume design was a very female-dominated area, or were there a lot of men involved?
No, actually, both of my mentors, my teachers, were men. And at Slippery Rock, there was Dale Melsness, who headed up the program, and he did leave my senior year, and that's when I did take over the program. So I always enjoyed working with Dale. He was inspirational, and he was an excellent teacher. And Cletus Anderson was the professor at Carnegie Mellon. He and his wife Barbara ran the department there. And Barbara was a meticulous craftsperson and taught us patterning and costume history. And Cletus was I'd call him the artistic director, and he was the design instructor. It was a fast program for me because it was a 2-year program, and my portfolio actually allowed me to be in a 2-year program as opposed to the 3-year MFA program, and learned so much from Cletus and Barbara. So no, I never really thought of it as a female-oriented arena. I've always worked with men, Gary Jones, William Ivy Long. A lot of my compadres at Carnegie Mellon were Eduardo Castro, Daniel Orlandi. They are amazing costume designers. So, no, I've always felt it was a shared field and everybody brought their own strengths and value to it.
It's a very creative field. Was your family supportive of your choice?
I'm definitely a black sheep. No one in my family is involved in the entertainment world in any capacity. My mom was a homemaker, always there for us, and my dad was a tool and die maker, made tools for Channel Lock, actually. So I have a lovely, complete set of baby Channel Locks in my possession, which I cherish and take care of. I'm crazy about my Channel Lock tools. My sister also has a set. And there was nobody else in the family that went into any kind of entertainment field. And I'll never forget my son. I have two sons, and one of them is a scenic artist now, and he went to Laguna College of Art and Design. My mother lived with us her final 6 years, and I'll never forget her talking to somebody back home on the phone, and she said, "Well, Scott's going, he's going to be an artist, and I just don't know what he's, I don't know what that will, what kind of job, I don't know." And I just looked at her and I thought, you have lived your entire life with me. I'm a functioning adult. I've always had a career. I've always been working. How does this still be a mystery? I don't know. So yeah, I was always involved in the arts in high school and always entering an art show or painting a set somewhere or, you know, singing and dancing, and not very well, but, or dressing somebody somewhere.
Is there a path for someone who wants to be a costume designer after you graduated from college? Where do you go?
Well, it's an interesting path. Everybody comes to it from someplace else. There's no specific route. One of my favorite people ever, with whom I worked for about 12 years, came to it from a psychology program. But she was also legacy, so she had family in the business and she knew the business, and we worked really well together because she brought those properties to the job, and I was able to bring the sewing and the artistic creative needs for, you know, fittings even. There were three of us on our team, and everybody brought something different to the table, and it made a really complete package for quite a few years.
What's your typical process when you get a job?
Well, every job is different, and I'm not always designing. Sometimes I'm supervising. I'm in two unions. I'm in 892, which is the costume design union, then I'm also in 705, which I call the worker bees, and that's supervising, and that's crewing and shopping. It's a whole different group of costumers, and I love being in both. So the value of being in both unions is I really can do pretty much anything that's needed. I've built walk-around costumes. I started with Sid and Marty Croft. We did the Barbara Mandrell show, which was my, of course, first foray into the country scene, and Barbara was amazing. But what I was doing was the puppets. So I was dressing Truck Shackley and the Texas Critters, and great guest stars on that show as well. And I was with Sid and Marty for about 5 years. And then Earlene Mandrell went on the road. She did the fair circuit, so I designed and built all of her clothes for that, as well as some of the walk-arounds that were involved with that show. So the process for each job, like I said, is different. If I'm designing, you will go in for an interview and hear what the creator is trying to say with the show, who the characters are going to be, who the cast is. You will come to the meeting with your ideas, you know, creatively, how you see the show going. You're looking at a palette. You also have to take into account who your stars are and, you know, what they can support. And you're there to support the story and the characters. It's all about the characters. So you really need to have that conversation with your actors. But that happens after you've been hired. So in the meantime, you've brought design ideas and palette and that discussion to the table. And then if and when you get the job, then you'll sit down with the producer, the creator, and you'll start working through these character issues and where they see the character going. And then eventually, of course, very quickly after that, you're talking to your actors and you're getting sizes and you're sizing each other up and getting to know, you know, what can we do, what do you hate, because you never want to make your actors uncomfortable. That's just not going to work out for anybody. So within their world and their sphere, then you come to the character. And I think one of the most gratifying things is when an actor looks at you and says, oh, you've got them in a fitting, and they say, oh, this, okay, now I get it. Now I feel like this person. And that's the best thing a costume designer can hear. It's because then it just blossoms, you know. It's like a second skin. They're comfortable with it. They make it work. And you've done your job. That's a good feeling. So as a designer, that's your métier. As a supervisor, you're dealing with the budget and liaisoning with all the different departments and the art department and graphics and getting t-shirts made. And it's kind of the nuts and bolts and making sure that the crew is doing what they need to do on a daily basis. Does everybody have the information they need from the designer and the assistant designer? The supervisor's job is really mired in minutia. There's a lot involved with supervisors. And then if you're a shopper, you're dealing more with the designer and the assistant designer, and it's more on a creative level. You're pulling clothes and prepping for fittings. And each job has its pros and cons. And it's busy. It's fast and it's furious. And, you know, the budget is always a concern. You're always thinking about budget.
Your days are probably never the same, but do you have a routine, and is there something that's the most important daily routine to you?
I have no routine. Every day is an adventure. And it really is. I never know what's going to happen. I also teach at USC, so I'm very involved with my students there. And not only am I involved with them at school, but once they leave, some of my proudest moments are my students who are now in the union and they're working on their own and they're professionals. But I frequently will get a call where they're on the ledge and, help me, I don't know what to do, or how do I do this, and what do I do with the union? And it's nice to be in a position where you can help them grow and continue. And I'm also very busy with the Television Academy. I'm very happy and proud that we have a split with our Emmy Awards now. There's so many fantasy and science fiction programs now that we've been able to split those shows away from period, because they just are so different. And I'm very happy for our peer group to have that opportunity. So I'm busy with that, and the Academy also has a wonderful internship program. And again, it's students, and I work with them and get them situated in the summer, put a program together for them, and I'm happy to say that most of them are also in the business now and working, and I stay in touch with them to make sure they're okay. And I'm also involved with Carnegie Mellon alumni, and I just went back there this past fall and had a television workshop with those students. So I'm pretty busy with students. And then whenever Reba has something come up, I always drop everything to go be with her. And we just had the premiere for One Day at a Time last night, so the second season is coming up, and I only take care of Rita on that show. Liz Bass is the designer. I love working with her team, and I just take care of Rita, and it's the perfect job. And then Fran had a show not too long ago. I supervised that with Brenda Cooper, who was designing that, and that was a fun reunion to come back to that group, because Fran's very loyal and she keeps her people together. So it's never the same. You know, every day you get up and you see what's going to happen. So, and I have a granddaughter, so Halloween is always busy. We can count on that. Well, I have a grandson too, and they're a lot of fun, so they keep me excited and busy and involved.
You're listening to the Passionistas Project podcast with our guest, three-time Emmy-nominated costume designer, Terry Ann Gordon. Check out her work helping to transform Reba McEntire into Colonel Sanders in the new KFC commercial. But first, here's more of her interview with Terry. Is there something looking at your career as a costume designer that you found was kind of the most rewarding element of the work you were doing?
I've just really enjoyed everything I've done. I've done commercials. That was kind of the beginning of my career. And the sitcom world was fantastic. and perfect for raising a family, multicam, you know, it's like doing theater. I do miss doing theater, that because that was my beginning. And when we moved to Los Angeles, it just made sense to branch out. And I always thought, well, I always want to stay involved with teaching because I do love that. Not a huge career. I'm not, you know, a gigantic Oscar or Emmy winner, though I have had several nominations. But I've really enjoyed everything I've done. It's all come along at a time when it was perfect timing. You know, I've not designed film, but I've done some crew work and been involved with some films, and I've been very fortunate to work with some amazing designers. Just finished, well, not just finished, I guess it was 2 years ago, it feels like yesterday, with Rita Ryack. We did a wonderful pilot. Sadly, it didn't get picked up, but just so creative and so artistic and really, really a wonderful project. And then working with William Ivy Long on Grease Live was amazing. That was just the best experience ever. And we all, the whole crew, you know, we're dying to get back together and do it again. Yeah, I've had great experiences and I love what I do, and I work with people that I love to work with and don't work with the ones I don't.
What's been the biggest obstacle in your career and how have you overcome it?
I think the biggest obstacle, and this goes back to my Slippery Rock days, one of my professors in a recommendation letter for me said, Terry's more interested in the doing of the work rather than the talking about it. I like going into a meeting and hearing everybody's ideas and then kind of walking away and mulling a little bit and thinking about it and letting it percolate and then come back with something. And sometimes in this business, that's not the most expedient way to work. And people will look at you sometimes like, is she getting this? Is she there? Is she in there? And I'm in there. I'm really in there. And the wheels are turning and I'm thinking about stuff. And, you know, I'll come back with some solutions. I love creative problem solving and finding an answer, even if it means I'm building the kale costume in my kitchen on the weekend, which I have done. It's like, we don't have time for this. Okay, I'm gonna go do this right now. And I'm out the door and gone. So yeah, sometimes that's a bit of an issue. It's a stumbling block.
Do you have some trick for overcoming creative blocks?
Yeah, exercise seems to get things flowing and get your brain back on track and breathing some air, just getting a little distance. And suddenly things pop. Or sometimes just sitting down at the drawing board and just forcing it. And as soon as you start to work, it opens the door. If you just sit around thinking about working, it doesn't work. And you might sit down and go, I have no idea. And once you're into it, maybe for an hour or so, things will start to pop. And suddenly things are on the page that we're just waiting for you to put a pencil on it. So yeah, it's an odd and interesting process. It always has been, always will be.
You're a mother, a grandmother, a designer, a supervisor, a teacher. I think I missed a few other things in there. How do you find the balance?
I don't know. It's just you do it. It's so funny because a lot of people have said, wow, you know, this energy, and I don't know. I don't think about it. I don't sleep a lot. And you have to do what inspires you at the time, I think. And I don't have an answer for that. It's just, it is who I am and is what I do.
Do you find that you've had to make a lot of personal sacrifices to have the career that you've had?
No, actually. I have a supportive family. My husband's amazing, and he's a great cook, too. And the kids have always, my two sons have always know, they've never wanted for anything, and they've always been cared for. And of course, you find out at every Thanksgiving, another story comes out of them where you go, oh, I was the worst parent. But they're alive, and everybody's doing well, and so I guess it wasn't that bad.
What is your secret to a rewarding life?
You know what? Doing what you want to do and not having people tell you you can't do it. Or even in the case of your parents who don't get what you're doing or understand you or you don't have the same language. And it's kind of what I tell my kids at school, find your tribe. Once you find, even if it's just a couple of people and you're on the same wavelength, it helps. I had amazing friends in high school, two in particular, who we just kind of helped each other move on into our world, which was not in Meadville, Pennsylvania. But we're all in different places now, but we all still stay in touch, and because we speak the same language, and there's an understanding there that's, and you find your tribe wherever you go. And then you help each other, and you progress, and you keep going. And when you do have those bad days, you have somebody you can call and go, I just blew it. And they'll go, yeah, but remember when we did that show? And they'll go, oh, yeah, that was worse. Okay. So it's good to have that history with people that speak your same language.
Looking back at your career, is there anything now that you would have done differently?
I don't think so. It's all worked according to no plan. And it's so funny because I haven't given myself deadlines or specific goals. A general goal, I've always had kind of that, and I've met each one of those goals. And I'm exactly where I think I want to be.
Do you have any rules that you live life by?
Be kind. Laugh. Gotta find the funny. You know what? If you can't laugh, or if you're just miserable, you really need to get out of that situation because it's detrimental to your health. It will kill you. And if the people you're working with are toxic, oh, that's the worst. That's just... yeah, you can't get out of those situations fast enough. And I've had a few moments where I've thought, okay, this time next week, this will be over. And that's what gets you through. But I, for the most part, I've always been lucky and blessed and fortunate to work with people that were simpatico.
Is there something that you've done that you're most proud of?
You know what? I think working with my students and seeing them get excited and that moment when it just hits and it takes off, that's kind of life-affirming. And even with your own kids, you never know what's going to hit with them, what's going to stick. And my boys have both come back to me with some amazing insights and reflections that just, they're incomparable.
Is there something that you know now that you wish you knew when you first started out?
That it is more business. I have a tendency to take things personally sometimes, and that's not the case. It's show business, and it's that's an important feature that I teach my students now, that always bring your A game, always be prepared. You may not get the job, and you may not know why you don't get the job, but you keep going, and you don't stop. And I think that's what I love about where I'm at with my career, being in 705 and 892. It gives me the option to keep working when I don't feel like really putting my heart on the line. But you have to be passionate about the project that you're going out for. And that's another thing I teach the kids. If it's not singing to you, don't even bother, because you won't be bringing anything to the project, and you probably won't get the job, and all those parameters.
So you said your mom made you your witch Halloween costume. Do you remember any other important lessons? Like, is there any lesson that she taught you that sticks with you?
Well, she did teach me how to use the machine, how to change the needle when I broke it, because I did a lot. And I had wonderful women in my my youth growing up. My father's family, he had 12 siblings. And there were three aunts who, I don't want to call them spinsters because that's just such an odd name, but they were independent and motivated and career women from Meadville, Pennsylvania. Two of them worked in the bank. One was the head of the savings and loan. The other one was the head cashier. And I had another aunt who was, actually, I don't know what her job title was, but she was very involved with the local hospital and ran one of the departments. I know she was feared and revered. They really held the homestead together. It was a family of 12. They helped raise all those kids. They took care of everybody in the family. If there was ever a need, they were somebody you could always turn to. And they were always so generous to all of us kids of their brothers and sisters. And I just have wonderful memories of visiting. And it was a huge Victorian home back in Pennsylvania. And we would all end up there. But for us kids, it was just it was a great time. And there was a music box and there was a piano. And, you know, they had the first color television. And they kept the traditions and the family stories alive for all of us. And they were great cooks. So there was always great food. And yeah, those women were really important to me. And I think they were instrumental in stamping that kind of independent, get out of Dodge, go have a career, go have a life. Because my sister also, she moved to Philadelphia and she became a nurse. And, you know, she's had a wonderful career. And we are both, you know, products of those women. I never thought anything was restricted. You know, I always felt like, well, I can do anything I want. And so I did.
Do you have cultural heroines that have influenced you?
I've always admired people like Katharine Hepburn. Those are amazing women who have forged their paths. And, well, Rita and Reba and Fran. Reba's mother is amazing. I love Miss Jackie. You know, and she's still on the ranch in Oklahoma. She's still working the cattle. She's just amazing. And she's fierce. And lots of times I'll come up with a design for Reba. And one of the first questions I always ask Reba is, what'd your mom say? Did Miss Jackie like it? She'll say, oh, she thinks you hung the moon. I say, okay, I'm done. That's all I needed to hear. So, yeah, strong women have always been instrumental in, on the other hand, my best friend's mother was just the sweetest, dearest woman, and I treasure her. She's gone now. She was a force, but a quiet force. And Mama Foster was always my second mother, another friend's mother. She was instrumental in our theater program back that we created back then, and she played Bloody Mary, and she was a pistol. And yeah, I have great memories of her, but she was also a take a stand, and she was dyed in the wool Democrat and fought for Obama and Hillary, and yeah, that's tough in Pennsylvania, in a small town, alone. So yeah, strong women, yeah, make me happy.
So looking to the future of young women, what advice would you give to a young woman who wants to become a costume designer?
Go into dentistry. No, just kidding. but it's a different career path than when I started. It's very fragmented now, and though there's so much opportunity to do the work, it's often difficult to afford it. It's an expensive world, and trying to realize your designs and the integrity and get the work done with some of the limitations that we now have, it's very different. I mean, the nanny was an amazing, well, that was just, those days are gone. We had fashion houses throwing clothes at us because Fran was a fashion icon and it was all about the clothes. The menswear, Alan Flusser, he was an iconic men's fashion editor, and he always recognized the nanny men and said they were so well dressed, you know, and that was just really gratifying. And to have 4 nominations from that show was also, it was an honor. And even though it seemed difficult at the time, I look back and go, wow, that those times just don't exist anymore. You know, there's so many different platforms and different formats and then different pay levels and tiers for contracts, and you really have to be contract savvy and deal memo wise and understand the business. It's a business.
Where do you see yourself 5 years from now?
This is fascinating because everybody is constantly, when are you going to retire? I don't get that word. I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me. And do what? I'm me. I'm going to do what I do. I'd probably be in the same place I am now. My husband keeps trying to move us. So geographically, I'm not sure. I think I'll still be here. But who knows? Until then, I'm just going to keep doing what I do.
Thanks for listening to the Passionistas Project podcast and our interview with costume designer Terri Ann Gordon. Catch her work on the Netflix reboot of One Day at a Time, and don't forget to subscribe to the Passionistas Project podcast so you can catch all of our upcoming inspiring guests.